Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2015. Lecture 14, delivered on February 26, 2015. The title of this lecture is Pricing Common and Preferred Stock.
Today, Pricing Common and Preferred Stock. To do this, I have to bring up one last formula. Well, it's actually two formulas. One's the specialized version, and then one's the general version. These will be the last formulas, of course, for the exam that's coming up a week from today. Now, on Tuesday of next week, that is entirely a review session. I'll say what I have to say during that session, and then I anticipate that you will ask me questions. The more you ask, the more I'll tell you about the exam. So it's worth your while to come prepared with questions, or if you don't know how to do a procedure very well, well, we'll go through that too. But this is the last actual formula-driven lecture or new content lecture. It's actually fairly simple, fairly straightforward to do. And I'm also going to bring up the capital asset pricing model, just to make sure you know how to do that as well in this lecture. But let me think how I can start this. Okay. I want you to imagine that every year for eternity, madam, you are going to get $100. Every year for the rest of eternity. Now, what would be the present value of that? Would that be a finite number or would it be an infinite number? It would be a finite number because you're going to be getting $100 when you're 25. You're going to get $100 when you're 26. You're going to get $100 when you're 90. You're going to get $100 when you're 115 years old. It's going to go on forever. But those $100 that are way out there become so minuscule in present value that essentially an infinite stream cash flow, an infinite annuity, does have a finite value, and we can figure out what that is. That's quite important from the perspective of valuing securities, because theoretically a corporation has no mortality. There's no reason why it should die of its nature. You are going to die. You know why? Because you are mortal. You are going to do things that wear out your body. Your body's going to break down. You're going to get joint arthritis. You're going to get a cranky old face. You're going to get, an enlarged prostate, the whole nine yards. A corporation really doesn't have that quality. Theoretically, a corporation goes on forever. So, if a corporation is paying a dividend, we have to assume that a holder of that share of common stock would have claim to an infinite stream, a stream that would go on for eternity. Yeah.
But if the guy doesn't live to eternity, then he can't get it in?
Well, he can bequeath it to someone, clearly. So, what would be the present value of something like that? If you were going to get $100 every year for eternity, you and your heirs and your assigns and their heirs and their assigns forever and ever and ever, assuming you actually have any heirs, what would be you take instead right now for that claim on an eternal stream? In other words, what we're talking about is a level annuity that goes on forever. We have a name for that. It's called a perpetuity. It's nothing but a level annuity that goes on forever, a perpetuity. And the formula for it is actually quite simple for a perpetuity. Let's call D the level amount per period. And let's call K the discount rate commensurate with the risk of that stream of cash. The formula is phenomenally simple. The present value of that sucker is nothing but D over K. That's all it is. It's a mathematical thing. It comes out of math. Sort of like the present energy of a vibrating string's energy through time that slowly dampens out but never actually completely goes away. D over K. Well, there is actually a place where we can apply this formula to pricing a security. And that would be in a share of preferred stock. Because preferred stock, and I mentioned this before and I'll bring it up again, when you buy a share of preferred stock, there are going to be a couple of features of it. Let's try one. NLT, cumulative. Let me do it this way. 1.6% cumulative preferred par value. No, let's give it a par value of $40 per share. Now, before I go any further, what this tells me is that this is a share of equity, except it's kind of an unusual bird. It's almost like a bond in a way. Because this share of preferred equity promises that every year from now until eternity will pay a dividend of 1.6% of the $40. Remember that this is just like a bond, like the coupon on the face value. The 1.6% of $40 would mean that, really? Clear that. 0.016 times 40. You're going to get a 64 cent per share dividend every year forever. Every year forever, you're going to get a 64 cent dividend. And unlike common stock, a preferred dividend must be paid. See, with common stock, there's no guarantee that you'll get a dividend. You might get a dividend 1 year from a company, but the company doesn't obligate the company to give you a dividend the next year. It probably would want to just to maintain continuity and give confidence to the investors, but it has no obligation to. If it issues preferred stock, if it raises money by selling preferred stock, it is committed to that 1.6% of par value dividend every year forever and ever and ever. And in this case, cumulative means that if it does not pay that dividend, it has to make it up before it can do any dividends to the common shareholders. So interestingly enough, preferred stock is equity, but it actually has a slightly higher claim on residual income than common stock does. Now remember, your debt holders, your bond, note, and bill holders, they have the prior claim. Equity has the residual claim. But within the equity class, preferred has the prior claim on residual cash flow. Keep that in mind. I might ask something about that on a test in some way. Preferred stock, interestingly enough, historically, and I think I already talked about this, historically preferred stock was actually kind of a popular investment for fixed income portfolios. If you are like 65 years old, you won't ever make it down. Let's pretend that you actually made it to that age. You're not going to be interested in rolling the dice on risky stocks that might pay a dividend, might not, might go up in value, might go into the tank. You're more interested in a fixed check every month or every year. So a preferred would fulfill that kind of a need. It's like a bond, except it has one feature that a bond doesn't. Now, if you were into fixed income securities, you'd probably get a lot of bonds in your portfolio because you get a known coupon. The only problem is that bonds mature and then you have to roll them over. Like if you were at the age of 60, you bought a bunch of 20-year bonds. Well, if you live to 80, those bonds will mature and then you have to roll that back into investments then. With preferred stock, there's no rollover. The thing is there forever. It just sits there forever and ever and ever. So from the an investor's point of view, they were kind of popular historically. They've lost their luster in recent years for a couple of reasons. On the one hand, from the company's point of view, they could raise equity money by selling common stock or by selling preferred stock. Now, or they could raise money by borrowing, selling bonds. Now, bonds are sort of like temporary relationships. You are going to have 20 years with that ugly son of a bitch that you are dating, and he is. I saw him. Really? You know? But then after 20 years, he's gone. He dies. You know he's going to die. And if he doesn't, there's always certain chemicals that can help him do that. In his meal one night, beef and noodles, you can't even taste cyanide in it. Okay? But it goes away. But whenever you sell anything that's equity, you are married to that. It is not a relationship. It is not going steady. It is not someone you found on HereDoggy.com. This is a marriage, and there is no divorce in this marriage. Equity holders are yours forever. You're stuck with them. With preferred shareholders, not only are you stuck with them, you have to give them money. With the common shareholders, you can just pretend they're not there. It's sort of like finding a relationship in a trailer park. But where the hell am I? Okay, with preferred shareholders, you got to put that money at them every year. You can't pretend they're not there. See, with that common shareholders, you don't have to pay them a dividend. They'll bitch at you if you don't, maybe, but you don't have to. You're with them forever, but you don't have to pay attention to them. But with preferred shareholders, you're married to them forever, and you do have to pay attention to them forever. So that's why, from a corporate point of view, preferred stock has kind of gone out of vogue. I saw an interesting twist on this, and I honestly didn't know about this. There's now a new variation on preferred, because preferred is actually kind of cool to sell. It's very easy to sell. Your commissions on the underwritings are very low with preferred stock. But I saw a kind of preferred stock that turns into common stock after a certain number of years. It actually rolls over. Kind of an interesting animal. But anyway, okay, let me get back to this. Look here. Suppose that the market is discounting cash flows like this. For this dividend cash flow, is 1.5%. I want to work my way through this, see if we can think this through before we have to do it. you, madam. What does the market say the company should pay?
1.5%.
Yes. What is the company paying?
1.6%.
So, will this stock sell at a premium to par or a discount to par?
Premium to par.
I love it when you talk like that. Yeah. Jeez. Take you to Denny's some night. Yeah. You see this? The par value is 40, so we should come out with a price a little above 40. Now, go ahead and just stuff that thing in. Take 64 cents, 0.64, divided by 0.015. 0.64 divided by 0.015. Look at that. Stock price is just a little higher, 42.67. It is selling at a premium to the par of the stock. In other words, the investors like this one because it pays a little more than it should, so you're going to see the demand for this kind of surge toward it, which will push up the price a little bit on it, elevated above par value. Now, on the other hand, if the market said it should be paying 1.8%, you'd see this thing sell at a discount to par. That's all there is to pricing a share of preferred stock. It is painfully simple to price. Now, common stock. The present value of a perpetuity. The formula I wrote there is actually a restricted version of the more general formula. The more general formula isn't that much more difficult, but there is a tripping place in it, and I'm going to try to make sure that you don't make that mistake on an exam or a quiz. But let me take you over here. This is what is called a level perpetuity. Now, let's talk about another version where it would grow at a constant rate, perpetuity. In other words, this dividend doesn't stay the same forever. It grows at a constant rate forever, or at least for the foreseeable future. In a case like that, the formula becomes: the present value is the dividend one period out divided by K, the discount rate, minus the growth rate. Remember, these are decimals. The point that I want to make sure you understand here is this. The dividend you use is D1. In other words, if I tell you the dividend they just paid is 10 cents per share common, and it grows at, let's say, 10%, the D that you would put in there is 11 cents, not the 10 cents. In other words, if I tell you the dividend that they have just paid, and I give you a constant growth rate, you need to use the dividend that just got paid times 1 plus the growth rate to get the D1 that goes in the formula. Don't put in the dividend that I tell you they just paid. Put in the dividend that they are going to get at the next period. Basically, this is an ordinary annuity. You have to have one period out to collapse it back to now, just like you did in the annuity formula. So, how would this work? RPR common just paid a 50 cent per share dividend that is expected to grow for the foreseeable future. at a rate of 6% for the foreseeable future. In other words, every year this dividend will get 6% better. If dividend cash flow is discounted at 12%, what is the price of this stock right now? Okay. Again, I'm going to ask you this question on the exam. I will, not this one. I mean, I'm not stupid. I'll ask you one just like it. Okay. First thing you need to do, you're going to need D1, you're going to need the K, and you're going to need the G. You're going to need those things. Now, remember that the D1, dividend one period out, is the dividend they just paid, grown one period, which would in this case be 50 cents per share times 1 plus 0.06. I think that's 53 cents a share, is it? Let me make sure. Yeah, 53 cents. Okay, the K I gave you was 12%, and the growth rate is 0.06. Notice, again, whenever you run into word problems, and this isn't true just in finance, I used to teach math years, get the numbers out of the problem as fast as you can, then forget about the words, because the words are getting in the way of your answer. Really, they are. Here, now we're ready to get the answer. The price of this stock, RPR common, is going to be 53 cents divided by 0.12 minus 0.06. So if I take that divided by, I get an 88 cent per share stock. My ass, that's not true. I get an $8, yeah, 80. I was just testing you there. 0.53 divided by 0.06. Yeah, I was going to say that's a penny stock. That's the kind of stuff I used to sell. Yeah, $8.83. That's all there is to it. That's all there is to pricing common stock by this method. Now, quite honestly, until you get into the stratosphere of pricing securities by derivatives models, almost any pricing that would be done, calculated, would be based upon this or a very similar method. What I'm saying there is that although this looks simplistic, it is really still the core way to price secure stock until you get into some really, really heavy-duty, hardcore quantum mechanics type of math that you're never going to see unless you take my advanced financial theory and practice course. This is it. One thing that I do want to bring up here, I've been doing this, and I'm going to ask this on the exam. I will ask a question like this on the exam. But there will be one thing that you'll need to know about to make sure that you get the right answer. My discount rate. See this 12% that I pulled there? And the discount rate I pulled here, 1.5%. You know where I got those? Madam, where did I get those? I pulled them out of my butt. That's all. Now, given that we are sophisticated people, that we are college educated people, we would like a better way to get the discount rate than that. We would like to have some kind of way that we can justify a little bit better. And hence we come, and I've already done this briefly, but I want to come back to it now, to what is called the capital asset pricing model, CAPM. Now, if you take the next course that I would teach in this series, FIL 240 series, would be FIL 341. And it would take you on a deeper journey into why this formula works. And I would also talk to you more about the criticisms of it and the alternatives to it. But realistically speaking, it still stands as like the standard for finding discount rates for securities. And its crucial component, it works like this. Okay, every stock I was showing you, and actually bonds have them, every security has a beta. You remember that beta animal that I was talking about? The beta is a number that it's two pivots. Beta can 0.0 means it has no non-diversifiable risk, and a beta of 1.0 means it has the market portfolio's non-diversifiable risk. Any beta between 0 and 1 is relatively less risky than the market portfolio. Any beta above 1 is more risky. That's the beta I'm talking about here. And every security has one. And I'm going to give you a couple of definitions here. Something that I brought up early in the quarter, or early in the semester, was the risk-free rate. This would be the rate of return that you should get on a security that has no non-diversifiable risk. Doesn't mean it doesn't have risk. It means that it has risk only that an idiot would bear. Because you put in a diversified portfolio, that risk will go away, that non-systematic risk. So this KSBF is the risk-free rate. Traditional proxy for it has been for a long time the rate of the yield on a short-term treasury bill. Interestingly enough, now there's another yield that seems more popular, and I'll mention it here in a minute. But let's just take this. The risk-free rate is kind of a theoretical thing, but we proxy it with something that's got to be awfully close to it, the yield on a short-term T-bill. Now, another thing that we're going to want to have is the expected return to the market portfolio. The expected return to the market portfolio. Now, that's that theoretical animal that if you had every stock in the economy and its contribution to your portfolio matched the weight of that company in the economy as a whole. It's kind of a theoretical thing, but really, if you were to, like, I don't know, you could argue that something like the Standard & Poor's 500, the expected return to the S&P 500, that would encompass a very significant amount of the economy. So the expected return to the S&P 500 might be a decent proxy for this expected return to the market portfolio. And as I had mentioned before, there are these services that routinely publish what is the best estimate of this KSBF from industry and academic professionals. I've participated in one of those. They take a consensus of a lot of people, these services do, who are knowledgeable about markets and all that, and they publish it, and that's sort of like the basis that a lot of people use for doing calculations. Now we're going to I'm going to bring up a couple of one more term here. K sub M minus K sub F. This is the expected market premium over risk free. In other words, it's how much you extra you get for not being a wuss. Have you ever eaten at an Indian restaurant? Oh, okay. Have you ever eaten? Okay. Now, they ask you, after you've ordered, the guy will ask you, what do you want, 0 to 6? Now, what they're referring to is how spicy it is, right? Now, consider that risk-free zero is a very satisfying meal, right? I mean, you know, it's good food. But you could order a 6 and get something that would, you know, it's sure. It's going to essentially turn the lower half of your body into a magma house and things like that. But it will give you an additional pleasure. So in other words, K sub M minus K sub F is ordering number 6 instead of number 0 because you're getting that that's the extra joy you get out of actually eating spicy food instead of non-spicy food. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Let me put another one. Okay. Your mom was really happy when you brought home an accounting man named John. Really good. I mean, he's going to really great guy. Really great guy. He drives a Volvo, and he very stable, has a house, 2 dogs, 3 cats. Very normal guy. But then there's this guy you know. People call him Ace. He has questionable tattoos and a very, very shadowy past that he doesn't really want to talk about, although some of those tattoos seem to have something to do with a federal prison. More interesting, Ace minus John. That's K sub M minus K sub F. You understand it? You're looking at me, oh God, please, no. Okay, you poor son of a bitch, I'll leave you alone. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to point out the K sub M minus K sub F. You're going to make a little money off a treasury bill. But where's the joy? Where is that, am I going to live through this experience? Where is that... I've never actually seen a Harley jump a cliff like he did. Yes, you could take a Tylenol, but your friend Lonnie has something different. Man, and it's good. Yes, your headache will be gone with the Tylenol, but this thing, I mean... You didn't even know that dead relatives could come back and sit with you. Okay, you got the picture now. Okay, here's the deal. Here's the CAPM. It's really a simple formula. I want you to use it to find your discount rate. And I'll give you all the pieces for it. Just put them into the formula. The discount rate that you're going to use for any calculation that I just did is going to start... Everything has to pay you the risk-free rate. You always start, nothing's going to get by not paying you the risk-free rate. Sort of like the minimum wage. No one's going to give you less than the minimum wage. But then added to that is this expected market premium over risk-free leveraged by the beta of the security? That's the capital asset pricing model. It is one of the coolest tattoos you can get. Seriously, there's this place that does ink right on the other side of Main Street from campus. They work with me on this. They'll give you a discount. You just tell them Big Al sent you. Okay? Left hip. Okay? That's where you put it. This is the capital asset pricing model. And it's really simple to use. Watch. Let me just do you. Okay. The expected return to the market portfolio is currently, wait, no, what is it? What's the expected return to the market portfolio right now? Guess. What? where do I start? I know, right? You have to think about it. Are stocks doing well or doing badly right now? They're doing quite well right now. You know, new highs every day and all that kind of stuff. So you're not going to be talking about 2% or 3%, but you're probably not going to be talking about 20% either, because that's a really high return. But somewhere in there, what would you expect if you invested in a well-diversified portfolio? What would you expect to get as your over a period of 1 year, holding period of 1 year? What would you say? Take a stab. Madam, take a stab. You have no idea. I just gave you two boundaries and you can't find a number between them. Yep. That's okay. Better than most wealth asset managers I know, anyway. But call it.
8%?
What the hell? Yeah, 8%? You know, my goodness, my Uncle Shlomo pays more than that, okay? Of course, he's a little on the shady side, but, you know, most of those deals come through. Most of them do. Most. I don't know. I called out recently the service that I provide one of them to. I was calling out 14%. That doesn't mean that's right. You should be looking at a consensus. You should look at the history is not a good guide. I've talked about that before. But you have to look at where the stock market is just roaring upward. And one of the reasons it just keeps roaring upward is because the Fed just keeps shoveling money to the banks. The banks aren't giving that to people. They're just investing it in these stocks, and the stocks are going up. So as long as the Fed keeps this liquidity spigot going, and every time you mention them tightening the money supply, they start wetting themselves, you know that those high returns on stocks are probably going to stay. So I would say that for the time being, we're still going to be seeing the stock market going up for a while, which would mean that what I've been seeing in the recent history on the stock prices is probably going to be a decent guide to what we're going to see for a while more. That's why I call 14%, and that's actually probably a little on the conservative side, but you know me, I'm a very conservative person. Okay, now. Treasury bills, short-term treasuries, are currently yielding 0.25%. And that's being generous. It is unbelievable how low the yields are on government securities right now, on treasuries. In you do recognize that a fourth of a percent is a wretchedly low interest rate. You do recognize that. In fact, like I said, 0.25% is being generous on it. It was probably 2 years ago. One of my students was working at a bank. She was a former student. She was working at a bank. And she called me at something like at my office. Somehow I was there. And she said, I've got a real problem. I'm making some kind of a bizarre mistake. We're reconciling our treasury purchases and sales during the day. And at the end of the day, they have to find out how much they have in Tier 1 capital, what their treasury position is. Remember, I told you about those. Every bank has money and treasury bills in their high liquidity. She said, well, I was doing the calculations of what we bought things for, what we sold them for, what prices are right now, and I'm just making a terrible mistake because I keep coming up with the wrong answer. It can't be this answer. Help me out here. And she couldn't tell me the exact numbers, but she gave me a good picture of it. I said, no, you're right. She was calculating the yield on their T-bill portfolio. The yield on the T-bill portfolio was negative. And it was actually a negative percentage yield. Historically, we've seen it a few times, but first time you actually grasp that in the buy and sell action over a period of a day, of a business day, somehow the yield on treasuries had gotten so low that it had dipped into negative. In other words, they were in a position where lending the government money meant that you were paying the government money to lend the government money. Now, that's not... Anyway, so let's hold it here at a fourth of a percent, 25 basis points, and let's be grateful that it's at least a positive number. Okay. If the beta of a security, wait, stop right there. Let me do this. I'm going to do something. Let me just do a, huh? Bite me. Oh, what I'll do is I'll pull this in. I know why I'll do it. Wait, I got. It's pretty lame when your front screen on your cell phone. Okay, let's just take this one. A well-known security. Come on. Is 1.35. What is the discount rate? For this stock. Well, all you have to do is key in the discount rate for the stock would be 0.25% plus 1.35 times 0.14% minus 0.25. And yeah, you can do these as percentages. Don't forget that you have to turn it into a decimal when you finally use it in the formula. But you can just do these this way. Okay, key it in, 0.25 plus 1.35 times the quantity, 14 minus 0.25. Whoops. And you get a discount rate for this stock of 18.81%. That's your discount rate. Is that right? Yeah. Now, here's how the question will work. I'll give you a narrative where I'll describe the dividend of a stock, the growth rate of the expected growth rate of the dividend, and I'll give you the information necessary to calculate the discount rate. Part A will be report the discount rate. You use the CAPM to do that. Part B will be to find me the price of that share of stock using that constant growth perpetuity formula that I gave you. That means that I have just told you the exact structure of one of the problems. First, you're going to see the information about that will say, oh, I see he said treasury bills and he said market portfolio. So that means I got to use a CAPM. Get all that information. Get me the answer there. That's part A. Put it down. And then I'll also tell you the dividend that the company just paid and the growth rate of the dividend. And that will give you all the information you need to then use that 0.1881 or whatever it is, minus the growth rate in the denominator and D1 in the numerator to get me the stock price. That will be at least, I think that's a 6 or 8 point question on exam one. And it's done. You will not go home empty-handed on that first exam. And that means, you know what that means, don't you? You can have mom put this exam up on the refrigerator because it will not have a zero on it. She'll be so proud of you. You should laminate it. That's all I have for you. Go home.